and a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. More from The Law Group coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, July 13th, 2024, 1 year ago yesterday, is when the former president at the time of the United States and the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party, Donald Trump, survived an assassination attempt while campaigning near Butler, Pennsylvania. The president was shot and wounded in his right ear by 20-year-old Thomas Crooks, who fired 8 rounds from an AR-15-style rifle from the roof of a nearby building. This was the moment as it unfolded live in Butler, Pennsylvania, 1 year ago yesterday.
The president in the history of our country took over, and look what happened to our country. Probably 20 million people. And you know, that's a little bit old, that chart. That chart's a couple of months old. And if you want to really see something that said, take a look at what happened. Oh.
A remarkable moment unfolding last year, the infamous fight chant from President Donald Trump with a bloodied ear after he was almost assassinated by a shooter in Butler, Pennsylvania. And, you know, I never really had the opportunity to go over this and talk about this publicly with an audience for many of you that have been following me for quite some time, you'll know that, it was a year ago tomorrow that I departed my radio gig here in Wilmington, never given the opportunity to discuss what I would describe as a momentous political, a potential political situation unfolding here in the United States, and one that could have completely changed the course of history. And this morning I wanted to really focus on not what could have been, but what the situation was, how it unfolded, and God forbid had the president not turned his head and was looking at that chart behind the scenes, this chart behind the screen, the one that showed immigration numbers under Joe Biden. That's what the president was pointing to when he turned his head to the right and a bullet went into his right ear. And it is genuinely terrifying to try and wrap your head around what the American political system would have looked like going forward had 1 year ago, at the time, former President Donald Trump had been assassinated in front of a crowd in Butler, Pennsylvania, live on television. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to harp too much on what could have been. Fortunately, it was not. The president, you know, continues to claim that the hand of God protected him that day. He did an interview with his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, on Fox News this week, and they talked about that. We'll have that clip coming up here in just a little bit this morning. But I think it's important to step back and look at the situation that unfolded and look at what could have potentially been the outcome had President Donald Trump not turned his head. What would last November's election, what would that have looked like if you had the presumptive Republican nominee killed? I mean, that's not some wild conspiracy theory. That's not some beyond the pale, could have, should have, would have happened situation. The president came inches away from being potentially killed in front of a crowd in Butler, Pennsylvania. And what would the result of that been? You know, I last week and over the last couple of weeks, I've throughout the day turn on a variety of YouTube videos. And last week I was watching media coverage of the 60s JFK assassination. And it's so fascinating to watch what media was then, what public reaction was then compared to how things were in the immediate aftermath of Butler, Pennsylvania. And, you know, just to show the insanity of all of this, this was the headline on the Denver Post the next day, the day after the president came inches away from losing his life. Headline: gunman dies in attack. Trump says he was shot in the ear. This was a real newspaper cover from a very prominent newspaper in the Denver, Colorado area, the Sunday Denver Post. Not the headline was not President Donald Trump, or at the time, former President Donald Trump, narrowly escapes assassination, but gunman dies in attack. And I think this paints the picture of the media sentiment that likely led to not only this attack, but then, of course, a couple of months later at the Mar-a-Lago Golf Club in Florida, where another gunman was stopped by Secret Service, who was also attempting to kill the former president of the United States. And it really goes into the dishonest, disingenuous, and incredibly hateful media that exists in the United States. A media apparatus that seemingly would have cheered on the assassination of President Donald Trump. And I don't say that lightly. I don't say that tongue in cheek, and I don't say that to try and demagogue the media. But when you see a headline like that published in a newspaper the day after, these individuals, some of these individuals, would have absolutely cheered this on. Because these individuals have so much hatred for not only President Donald Trump, but for you and I, the 70 plus million American people that supported the president before this situation, July of last year, after this situation, and continue to support him to this day. They want there to be devastation and destruction in America. And that to me is probably the most disturbing part in all of this. And it goes farther than the post from that post from the Denver newspaper. You know, here this is another post on this is CNN the day that it happened. Secret Service rushes Trump off stage after he falls at rally. It's just a completely dishonest headline. It was blatantly obvious and clear what happened. Trump, you watched the video. CNN was airing this rally live. And you can very clearly and very obviously tell that the president of the United States, or at the time, the former president of the United States, was shot in the ear. He grabs his right ear and falls to the ground as Secret Service surrounds him. And you can hear more gunfire going off as Secret Service counter sniper units neutralize the threat and kill the 19-year-old shooter. But this was the headline. Here's another for you. Trump removed from stage by Secret Service after loud noises startles former president. This was from David Jackson writing in the USA Today network of newspapers, including the Wilmington Star News across the country. This was the immediate reaction to the former president of the United States almost being assassinated in public, with cameras all over him, with a crowd behind him. Unfortunately, firefighter Corey Comparate was killed in that. A couple of other people seriously injured as well. What would the reaction have been had Thomas Crooks been successful in the mission that he set out to do? I genuinely don't know. And I've always wondered, not hoping or wishing that it had unfolded in a different way, but I've always wondered, what would the reaction been the next morning, later on that day, through the rest of the presidential election that unfolded, if the presumptive Republican nominee, the former president of the United States, was assassinated? And I genuinely don't know where we'd be right now. I mean, obviously, there still would have been a presidential election. Things would have still gone on. It seems blatantly obvious that a Republican candidate probably would have won with the fact that their nominee was murdered in cold blood. So that part probably plays out. But what does the civil unrest look like? Because there's no doubt in my mind that there would have been an incredible amount of civil unrest across the United States. People who are supporters and at the time were supporters of President Donald Trump, they would have absolutely taken to the streets. You would have seen an incredible amount of a probably incredibly violent civil unrest, as many individuals would be of the mindset and not completely inaccurately that the media has spawned a lot of this. The media created a lot of this. The media spawned and allowed a situation like unfolded in Butler, Pennsylvania, to actually take place. That's not, you close your eyes and you imagine what that looks like. It's not a pretty picture. It is probably a very, very chaotic situation that begins unfolding across the United States of America. And that's why in the title of the show this morning, I describe it and talk about, you know, dangerously close to a turning point. I think that's an accurate summation of what could have happened. Now, we know what the actual result was. Fortunately, the president was not seriously injured. He was still shot in the ear, right? No, not taking anything away from that. But he was not seriously injured. He was able to recover pretty quickly a few days later, making his way to the RNC convention in Milwaukee to speak for the first time publicly after being shot in the ear. Many folks in political circles, myself included, described the Butler, Pennsylvania event as a turning point in the presidential election. Even in the days following, there was some pretty broad consensus that that was probably the day in which Donald Trump won the presidential election. That was probably the day that secured him victory over whoever the Democrat candidate was going to be at the time, whether it was Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. And I think that's also a pretty accurate summation of what unfolded. As video circulated across the internet, the infamous picture that you have seen, hundreds if not thousands of times, of the president holding his fist in the air, bloodied after this situation unfolded. And there's really no question in my mind that it was that event, that it was that day. And now that does not do the entire United, that does not control the entire presidential election. Could things have been different? Absolutely. But there's no doubt in my mind that that day, those events in large part shaped what would then go on to be the November 2024 presidential election. This picture of President Donald Trump with a bloodied right ear, blood strewn across his face, holding up his fist as Secret Service escorts him off the stage with the American flag flying in the background. This is an incredibly iconic picture. Now, you look at moments in political history across America. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of photos that that carry an incredible amount of weight and tell a remarkable story. I would argue that this is one of those photos that, you know, in the history books, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, this will be a photo and a picture and a story and a situation that will be discussed, as it should be, with an incredible amount of magnitude. And again, taking a look at why this situation unfolded, how did we get to the situation that we did in Butler, Pennsylvania, and what would the reaction have been had President Donald Trump not turned his head? You would have likely seen an incredible situation unfolding across the United States of America. You were looking at a guy who, prior to the Butler, Pennsylvania assassination attempt, was thrown in front of courts on bogus charges in a variety of different states, a guy who had the FBI raid his property looking for so-called classified documents that he stole when he left the White House, and, you know, the big FBI photo op as they take pictures of envelopes that just say classified. There's nothing in them at all, but big photo op there for the great three-letter agency that is the FBI, the political persecution of President Donald Trump, and then all of that culminating with somebody attempting to take his life. And then, of course, as we would learn months later, another attempt, not anywhere near as close, but another attempt to assassinate the president of the United States. It is an incredibly scary scene and an incredibly scary situation. It's not something that should be taken lightly. And I do genuinely wonder and try and put myself in a position to walk through what that situation would have been had the president not turned his head. And it is not something that would have ended well. It is not something that would have been I don't even know how to describe the situation that would have unfolded. You had this ratcheting up of political pressure beforehand. For, at the time, you know, 9+ years beforehand, you had members of the media, members of the Democrat Party, calling President Donald Trump a ruthless dictator, comparing him to the likes of some of the worst individuals in human history, Adolf Hitler, Mao. I mean, just incredibly terrible people that led to the death and destruction of millions of individuals in total. That was the comparison that they drew with the New York billionaire, former president businessman that was running for president once again in 2024. That was the media stage that they and the narrative that they had concocted over the better part of 8 or 9 years at the time when this unfolded. Of course, coming down the golden escalators in June of 2015. That's the story. That's the situation that they had worked so hard to craft this narrative on. And again, you should look at those newspaper headlines from the Denver Post. When you look at the story from CNN, when you look at some Democrat lawmakers and their commentary on social media right after this happened, saying, "Oh, you know, Trump, it was just a scratch. He didn't really get hurt. He got a scratch on his ear. He didn't even get shot. It was when he, you know, hit the ground that his ear split open." I mean, these people just have absolutely no shame. These individuals want, I would argue in many cases, want to see the complete and total unraveling of American society. And of course, you would have had individuals that would have been incredibly distraught, pissed off, frustrated by what they watched unfold. They would have taken to the streets, and then, of course, the media would have used that as an opportunity to call Trump supporters, Republicans, conservatives, unhinged voters, the craziest people that you can imagine. Of course, all meanwhile, the Democrats, the mainstream media, and everybody else sat back and watched as Black Lives Matter and Antifa burned down United States cities, attacked law enforcement, took over zones of cities during the summer of love, the summer of peace in 2020, with, you know, mostly peaceful protests that lead to federal courthouses burning. mostly peaceful protests that allowed small businesses to be looted, raided, and ransacked by left-wing activists out of Black Lives Matter and Antifa. It's an unbelievably scary proposition. God forbid the president had not turned his head. So over the weekend, his daughter-in-law, who's been, of course, in the news a lot over the last couple of weeks, especially here in North Carolina, Laura Trump, she hosts a show called My View that runs on Fox News. She sat down with her father-in-law, the president of the United States, and described the situation in Butler, Pennsylvania. Here was a little bit of that back and forth exchange from over the weekend.
Well, we are at the anniversary of your Butler rally, where Eric and I, along with Luke and Carolina, watched on live television, as so many people across the country and really the world did, when there was the assassination attempt on you. And as we come to this moment, I'm thinking back to what happened right after that. You actually called all of us on the phone. And it was amazing to me that that was what you thought to do, that you wanted us to know that you were okay. And I know that's a moment none of us will ever forget, and I'm sure for you, you know, tenfold.
Well, it was unforgettable. I didn't know exactly what was going on. I got whacked, there's no question about that. And fortunately got down quickly. You know, people were screaming, and I got down quickly, fortunately, because I think they shot 8 bullets. Then one got me, and one got another one, and one got another one, and one killed Corey, the firefighter, great guy. And, you know, we had a tremendous, massive crowd. Tens of thousands of people were there. And our sniper, within less than 5 seconds, was able to get him from a long distance with one shot. If he didn't do that, you would have had an even worse situation. It was really bad. But he really did a fantastic, his name is David, and he did a fantastic job. It went about his business less than, just about 4 seconds. And that's when it all stopped, and he got him perfectly from a very long distance. So we got a little bit lucky in that regard.
There was so much conversation after that, though. You had members of Congress visiting the site there, people really on top of wanting to get answers to that. But I think we still are wondering.
Yeah.
Do you know, are we going to get answers? Will the American people get answers as to what ultimately happened there that day?
So they briefed me numerous times, the FBI, the Secret Service, sort of everybody. DOJ, Pamela's doing a fantastic, I think she's doing a fantastic job. But they briefed me, and I'm satisfied with it. They should have had somebody in the building. That was a mistake. They should have had communications with the local police. They weren't tied in. And they should have been tied in. So there were mistakes made. And that, you know, shouldn't have happened. And that building was a prime building in terms of what they were trying to do. So, but I was satisfied in terms of the bigger plot, the larger plot. I was satisfied. And, you know, I have great confidence in these people. I know the people, and they're very talented, very capable. They had a bad day, and I think they'll admit that. They had a rough day. They didn't do a good job. They shouldn't have had anybody in that building. That building was a prime location for somebody that was disturbed, mentally disturbed. And we had, you know, a couple of other events. This is a very dangerous job, being president. You know, I say a race car driver, 1% of 1%, think of that, die. It's not a lot. A bull rider, I think that's pretty dangerous. It's like 1/10 of 1% die. And with the president, it's like 5%. Why didn't you tell me this? I could have maybe made a different decision. But I wouldn't have made a different decision because we're doing so well. The country's back. And it's, as I said, everyone's saying we've got the hottest country in the world. And we've done it within, when the king of Saudi Arabia told me that, that was 4 months, 4.5 months. And now it's almost 6 months. And when you think it was, I would have said it would have taken longer than that, but we have been very active. Even doing this interview, I feel guilty because I'm supposed to right now be working.
We appreciate it, though.
You know, it's, no, we're really busy, and doing a great job. We have other countries wanting to do business with us so badly. They never appreciated it. Now they do. You know, they took advantage of our country on trade, on the military, on NATO. You saw, I solved the NATO problem last week, and we had every country is now paying substantially more money, like from 2% to 5%, and they weren't paying the 2, but they're paying the 5, and it's over $1 trillion a year. Think of that, over $1 trillion a year, and it's going to make it something. And we got that done, and we have a big voice in NATO now. We had really not much of a voice. With Biden, you had no voice at all. He didn't know where he was. And so we're doing well. The trade thing is going to be very big. And we're sending out letters as we speak. They literally just started going out. And I signed the letters. And it's basically telling countries that we are going to give you the privilege to shop and work in our country.
So that's President Donald Trump on with his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, over the weekend on her very popular Fox News show, My View with Laura Trump, talking about the events that unfolded a year ago yesterday in Butler, Pennsylvania. And you know, when you look at the background and the security, I mean, there's no question about it that the Secret Service miserably failed. And you had the director of the Secret Service step down from her position in just like within a week and a half or 2 weeks of the Butler, Pennsylvania shooting. She testified in front of Congress in late July and then stepped down the following day. And so what all, you know, what could have been is probably a very dark time, but not probably, is in fact a very dark time in American history. I mean, you look at some of the assassination attempts that have happened. You've looked at, you know, the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan in the 80s. That was a massive screw up by Secret Service as well. And many describe this 10 times worse as the individual Thomas Crooks, who fired the gun at the president, was sitting on a roof that the Secret Service deemed was too sloped, too much of an incline for them to be able to get on top of and provide cover of. You'd have this, you know, building with a clear view, a clear vantage point of where the president was going to be standing on stage, and the Secret Service completely botched the situation. Now, fortunately, they were able to recover very quickly. Counter-sniper teams immediately neutralized the threat. But it was, you know, poor planning, not, as you heard from the president, not working with local law enforcement agencies on the ground in Butler, Pennsylvania, whether that's state police, sheriffs, and local law enforcement, to make sure that the scene was as secure as could possibly be. In the days and weeks after that, the president started hosting rallies inside enclosed areas, obviously due to the massive security concerns that somebody else would try and assassinate him, somebody else would try and take his life. He then would then go to continue to have some of those outdoor rallies, but flanked by bulletproof glass. That in the latter parts of the 2024 campaign, after the RNC convention, any outdoor events, any outdoor rallies that took place, the president had three-sided plexiglass in, you know, kind of as he looked out into the crowd that were protecting and not giving a sniper or somebody else the opportunity to fire around and potentially shoot and kill. At the time, then would be the RNC, you know, the RNC nominee for the Republican Party. You know, this was the area and the stage of about 430 feet from where the shooter was to the stage, a clear shot towards the president. You can see where the Secret Service counter sniper teams were set up behind him. A truly remarkable situation that unfolded. It happened a year ago, yesterday, and I've never really had the opportunity to talk about it as my end to radio here in Wilmington, all circumvented around the Trump shooting. So thank God that the situation did not unfold the way that it presumably very easily could have if this individual had been successful and potentially shooting and killing the former president of the United States, who would then, of course, go on to be the RNC nominee and be very successful in the November 2024 election, beating at the time Vice President Kamala Harris, and has now been in the Oval Office since January the 20th in his second term. So I know there's a lot of commentary, a lot of comments. You can drop those on our YouTube channel. You can leave them on our Rumble and X feeds as well, as we kind of reflect on what almost was and could have been an incredibly dark day and a turning point, genuinely, a turning point in American politics 1 year ago yesterday. I can only imagine how things would have been if Thomas Crooks was successful in what he set out to do. Very, very dark, very, very violent, very, very dangerous times, struggling times in the United States of America. It's not a happy situation. It's not something that would have been looked back on as a good time in America. I struggle to even wrap my head around what the response, what the reaction of that would have been had the president been assassinated in Butler, Pennsylvania back on July 13th, 2024. Before we continue this morning, we've got a lot to get into on this Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show. I do want to tell you about the law group here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. And great news, they are located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088. You can also visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088 or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. A busy Monday morning. We've got some news out of Wilmington coming up. We'll get into all of that as the Nick Craig Show rolls on, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Pretty significant announcement expected later on today here in Wilmington, as Wilmington City leaders have set the date in which they will announce a new chief of police for the city of Wilmington. According to Wilmington Mayor Bill Saffo, the new chief is set to be named today. With that, there are apparently 45 individuals that did apply for that position, and the city will announce at some point today whether who that new individual will be. In the interim, you've got former Wilmington Police Chief Ralph Evangelist is the interim chief. He is currently serving in that position. Donnie Williams, who was the current police chief, retired at the end of June. So you had Ralph Evangelist in there as the interim chief. And, you know, this is going to be a pretty big decision for the Wilmington City Council. And obviously that candidate, I can only presume, has already been picked, as the announcement is supposed to come out later today. But you look at some of the issues that the city of Wilmington is facing and some of the calls and discussions on action that needs to be taken within the city. You had a Facebook post last week from Wilmington City Councilman Luke Waddell about some of the juvenile violence that has taken place within the city limits, and some calls that he claims needs to help and things that need to change to deal with the lawlessness and severe public disorder that happens in downtown Wilmington on the over the July the 4th weekend, a fatal shooting taking place at 2:30 in the morning on the 100 block of Front Street. That is, of course, the prime downtown business district where you've got bars and restaurants packed to the brim with the individuals celebrating the 4th of July weekend, shots ringing out, somebody getting killed in that shooting on July the 6th. Councilman Waddell also points to bars and restaurants that are knowingly serving underage individuals and allowing that to take place in the downtown area. You, of course, have got some of the increased calls to deal with the homeless population within the city of Wilmington, as well as that has been a hot button discussion over the last couple of years. We've seen both the county and city take a variety of actions to deal with homelessness, public camping ordinances, and different things of that nature to move those individuals out of downtown Wilmington. Of course, the left wants nothing to do with that. They seemingly are perfectly okay with these individuals harassing, in some cases assaulting, individuals within the city of Wilmington. No fault of the individuals just walking around downtown and minding their own business. So there's a lot that's at stake as we look at the next police chief here in the city of Wilmington. And, you know, looking at who was the previous chief in Donnie Williams, a lifelong member of the career-long member of the Wilmington Police Department, rose up through the ranks, a Wilmington native. His leadership, I think, fell very short as it relates to the Wilmington Police Department. I don't believe that he did a good job and was effective at being a strong leader for that department. He was constantly unwilling to speak to the public, to speak to the media, has blackballed and blacklisted the vast majority of media outlets throughout New Hanover County and the greater Wilmington news area. Does not talk to radio stations, does not talk to one of the local TV stations because they've been critical of him, rightfully so. And you know, when you look at the city of Wilmington, the growth that the city is seeing in the important area that it is for our greater area of southeastern North Carolina, it is incredibly incumbent on the Wilmington City Council to appoint an individual that is going to be a strong voice, that is going to work with our phenomenal new district attorney in Jason Smith to deal with lawlessness within the city of Wilmington, to deal with crime and all of the issues that what is a relatively large metropolitan area. Obviously, Wilmington's not a major city, but what is a large metropolitan area throughout southeastern North Carolina? No question about it, the largest city in the southeast, the major economic driver for what goes on in southeastern North Carolina. And this comes back to something that the left has completely lost the narrative on, which is law and order, the rule of law. And it's something that I think if you were talking earlier about the November election last year, it's something that the American people are incredibly frustrated with. When they see individuals in blue cities getting let off the hook for incredibly heinous acts of violence, they're not satisfied with that. The American people, and this is another 80-20 issue that Democrats, surprise, surprise, are on the wrong side of history with. Being soft on crime is not a successful political ideology. Allowing lawlessness to run amok in cities and counties and towns across America is not something that the vast majority of people agree with. Now, those on the very far left of the political spectrum, these are the no more police crowd. These are the defund law enforcement crowd from back a couple of years ago. And those costs still exist. Those individuals still have their little advocacy groups here and there that are always trying to tear down law enforcement, Monday morning quarterback, every single decision that they make. Of course, being in law enforcement, of which I am not, but from all accounts, you know, split-second decisions that law enforcement are making each and every day as they have come under greater assault in recent years, it is very important to have a strong leader. And the unfortunate reality is former police chief Donnie Williams I'm going to argue, was not a strong leader. He did not have the trust of the public. He sure as hell did not have the trust of those within his department. We covered the story back a couple of weeks or back a couple of months ago of the survey that was taken within the Wilmington Police Department, looking at what the officers, these are sworn men and women of the Wilmington Police Department, that felt that the former police chief was not providing them a successful work environment, that they believed that the former chief of the Wilmington Police Department was not doing what he needed to do as a he was not doing what he needed to do as the leader of a massive police department, as the leader of a police agency, an entity that has an incredible responsibility in downtown Wilmington. And so when you look at some of the surveys that have come back, when you look at the survey that was taken back a couple of years ago, or the some of the studies that have taken a couple of years to take place, mismanagement within the department, you've had the city spend tens of thousands of dollars on various studies and surveys. I mean, the whole situation has just been a mess. And it doesn't need to be that way. It shouldn't have ever been that way, but here we are. And so I'm very curious as we go through our Monday here and see the announcement from the city of Wilmington coming up a little bit later on in the day today, who that individual is, what their not only what their public persona is going to be, because that's an important part of it. And this is what is always, I'm just going to drop the veil. What has always pissed me off beyond belief with Chief Donnie Williams and why him and I were at odds when I was on the radio here in Wilmington was his unwillingness to just speak to the public. You had a variety of questions being asked. Back in 2023, you had a large amount of uptick in violent crime. Of course, you had the shooting as it related to True Colors Brewing. You had some big time issues that were being discussed in the city of Wilmington, and the chief was just MIA. He would send his PR people, his spokespeople out, which is fine. Obviously, you need to have some sort of public information officer. You need to have individuals that are capable of speaking to the public. No question about that. But you also want to hear from your leaders. Yes, when you're having a press conference, it makes sense to have a PIO, to have somebody that deals with media and is media trained talking to the press. No question about that. But as the police chief, I would argue it is an important job and it is an important responsibility of that position to speak to the public. And you might say, why? Why does the police chief need to speak to the public? Whether that's on radio, going on, you know, we only have two TV stations here in Wilmington. Donnie Williams completely blackballed WECT and Fox Wilmington, would not interview with them at all. And you know, of course, wouldn't speak to WHQR or vast majority of the other outlets in town. And you might say, why is that relevant? I think it's incredibly important for the head of a law enforcement agency. And I'll note, the police chief, unlike the sheriff, Ed McMahon, is not a elected position. It is an appointed position by the Wilmington City Council. Regardless of whether it's appointed or elected, the way that people have trust in law enforcement is very simple. They need to be able to trust their leader. They need to be able to trust whoever it is, the guy or gal at the top, that is setting the directive, calling the shots, and leading the entity. And when that individual is absent from media, when that individual is not going on the news, is not going on radio, is not talking to the local media, and then all you've got are these controversies behind the scenes, people suing the police department, officers believing that there's an incredible amount of racial discrimination taking place within the department, then you start to erode the public trust. And we know, for without a shadow of a doubt, that when you have an erosion of trust within law enforcement, it does not create a good situation. When people do not trust their local law enforcement, in this case, the city of Wilmington, that creates a bad situation. It creates animosity between the public and the sworn law enforcement officers that put their lives on the line each and every day to keep the city of Wilmington safe and the greater area safe. That's not good. That does not lead to a prosperous or successful area. You have to have trust in your leaders. And when you're talking about law enforcement, which has been under an incredible amount of scrutiny over the last couple of years, you want to have trust in your leadership. You want to believe and have faith in the individuals that are responsible for leading the department or departments that they have responsibility over. We did not have that. The public did not have that with Chief Williams. That's just not my opinion on it. That's what studies have shown. That's what surveys of his own deputies within the Wilmington Police Department have shown. And if you go on social media and look at the public reaction, that is absolutely what has unfolded here across the city of Wilmington. It is not sustainable, and it is not something that creates a prosperous community or a vibrant community. You have to have trust in law enforcement. You just have to. And the way that you do that is by the leader, the guy or gal that sets the narrative for the entire department. So a big decision, apparently 45 applicants in the running for this top position within the city of Wilmington Police Department. We will keep an eye on what goes on today and see who the city ends up reaching out to and who they offer that position to. And once that individual's name is out there, we'll do our due diligence to see if we can't schedule an interview with them. And again, talk about what's going on in the city of Wilmington. You've got bars willfully serving underage individuals. You've got a homeless problem that's being dealt with, and the greater tone and narrative that needs to be set for the Wilmington Police Department, not only gaining back the trust of the people in the city of Wilmington, but also the individuals within the department, right? Also not a good situation when there is a huge morale issue within law enforcement, when people within the agency, when they do not trust their employer, when they believe that there's discrimination going on within the place that they work, that also does not create a good situation. You need to have a trusted, stable law enforcement entity to keep a community safe and running in the right direction. I would argue we do not have that right now in the city of Wilmington. Chief Williams deciding, I can imagine in large part because of some of the calls, some of the outrage, to step down and retire from his position. He's been the chief since 2020. I'm very curious to see who the city of Wilmington picks, and getting to meet and learn about this individual and hear from them as to what is going on here within the city of Wilmington. So that's coming up a little bit later on today. I'll have that news on our social media channels throughout the day. And of course, if there's any relevant information that comes forward tonight, if there's any interviews that take place, we'll bring that to you tomorrow morning. A great way to stay up to date with that breaking news, you can follow me over on X at Nicholas M. Craig, or search for the Nick Craig Show on Facebook. Those two social media channels, breaking news across the area and things that happen outside of our live time slot here on the show. Quick look at the tropics before we round out our show here on a Monday morning. There is an area of disturbance that is being watched by the National Hurricane Center out of Miami, Florida. Fortunately, this is a low pressure system that is moving westward. We had that tropical disturbance last week or over the 4th of July weekend here. That storm moved across the Gulf of America through Florida, and then, of course, impacted our area. This system moving the opposite direction, this low-pressure system moving over the coast of Florida to the west, dumping its way out into the Gulf, and as of this morning, has a 20% chance of development within the next 7 days. So this is something that the National Hurricane Center is continuing to watch, not expecting any impacts here across southeastern North Carolina, at least as of right now. But of course, forecasts are scheduled to change. I think we're going to be in the clear for this one as we get into the more active time of the Atlantic hurricane season here across southeastern North Carolina. Well, that's going to do it for a Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us here this morning. Thanks to the law group right here in Wilmington for their continued support. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's going to do it for a Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show. We'll chat with you tomorrow morning, streaming live at 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts.